Good morning. Greetings from Manitoba. So I'm just going to, I guess I'll start with giving you a context of Manitoba, actually, because that's where we're primarily operating right now. So Manitoba is definitely most of the infrastructure and, you know, urbanization's concentrated around Winnipeg and Brandon and that western region of Manitoba, but very much in the far south of the province. There's a few little blips of, you know, urbanization, if you will, as you go up in the north a little bit. But we have still well over a dozen, almost 15 communities that are still remote, which means never mind internet. They don't even have all-weather roads. The only way in or out is by plane. Unless it's winter, some of them have winter roads, right? Or ice roads. So that's sort of the context that we have to face. And if you look on the map, there's a ton of water, ton of little lakes, a ton of creeks and rivers and muskeg, bog, right? If you could drop a rock in you know, on the ground, come back a week later and the darn thing's moved 50 feet over there, right? So it's really challenging terrain to work in. The other aspect of it too is we talked about, or we heard from Sierra about the whole gap, right? The digital divide. And Manitoba, it's extremely pronounced, the southern and northern digital divide. Essentially, if you're in the city of Winnipeg, if you're in Brandon, let's say, and Steinbach, a couple other locations like that, you can get pretty darn good internet. For Manitoba standards, it's not Ottawa standards. but as soon as you step outside the city, not even very far, even like 5 kilometers out of the city, your access to connectivity is like a fraction of what you get in the city. So you don't even have to look at, once you get to remote, it's even worse. So we've got a lot of remote communities that, you know, you're lucky if you can get 1 megabit, maybe 3 megabits per second for your connectivity, right? So absolutely, we heard about Netflix, yeah, no. not even gonna happen. And it's not even internet alone, it's also cell phone coverage, right? So, you know, even places that do have a highway and they have a cell phone plan, the data packages are so lousy that, you know, people have had to learn how to manage and control their own data on their phone because, you know, you burn up whatever little data that you have and now you get hit with a big bill afterwards. So those are some of the challenges that we face in Manitoba. So I'm here representing Broadband Communications North. So I'll tell you a little bit about who we are. We are a nonprofit, Indigenous-owned internet service provider with assets, with infrastructure that we have across our network. We try to leverage Manitoba Hydro's fiber network as much as we can. But when we were first started back in 2002, we were established specifically with the goal of addressing those most remote, difficult to reach communities. And we started off with about 23 communities. At the time, it was primarily satellite with a little bit of wireless connectivity. And since then, over the years, we've managed to build a sustainable model where we've been able to grow year after year and reinvest the funds into expanding the network further and further as we go. Which I think is an important piece, that sustainability aspect of it. We haven't gone around begging for operational funds or anything for us, which I think is a really good strong point because sometimes that comes with strings, right? You know, you get funding and it's like, yes, and it's like, oh yes, now there's strings. we haven't had to have that kind of dynamic. Over the years of that development and growth, so I said we started with 23, we're at over 50 communities now where we have a presence in. In some cases, we are the ISP for the end user. In other cases, we're supplying local ISPs because that's also been a model of ours, is if a community wanted to set up a local community ISP, that we would support them and we would sell the bandwidth back to them. And then in other cases, we've been asked into specific communities by enterprise customers or things like that. So that's sort of kind of the lay of the land of how we've been for many years. I've started 2 years ago with the specific mandate, I guess, to diversify our revenues, because you get a bit of risk when your revenues are just based on a few large entities, let's say. So since then, what we've been doing is looking at a few things. One of those is we've established a training center now, specifically focused on the ISP side of things. So we've gotten our certification through the international organization, Fiber Optic Association, where we can now deliver fiber optic training. We have numerous other certifications like that we can train now, like Ubiquiti, MikroTik, some of the basic things through CompTIA. We're developing our own as well to train. And we're hoping to use that with a lot of our communities across the north to build up the capacities. Some of the challenges as an operator is obviously it's super expensive to go and fix something when you're having to take a $3,000 flight to go there and do it. And we've had cases like that, you know, you have to send two technicians because we used to send one, but then a pack of wild dogs went after one and he had to throw his lunch to distract them and then run through the 6-foot snow to get to the shelter and lock himself in. So now we send two techs, but you know, the flights are expensive. That's Manitoba realities. It's expensive, and we've had people go up, they look at the issue and they go, oh yeah, plugged it back in, I'm coming home, right? So, you know, you're spending like $5,000 for this and just to plug something in, whereas if you had somebody local that had just the basic level of training to understand and recognize what the different devices were and, you know, which order you need to cycle them on for power cycling, things like that, it would save a lot of cost and really be able to make us a lot more efficient in service delivery. So that's what we're looking to do. And it's not just for us. We're actually hoping to work with even some of our competitors as well to say, hey, look, I mean, in some cases, a community is too small for us to hire somebody full time. But if we work with our competitors and we're all contracting this individual, that makes it a full-time job for that person. And it makes it a lot easier for all of us competitors to service that region. Some of the other things that we've been working on as well is we've been launching, I say soft launch because we've got a few business lines for this new company, and we've got a few of them that are started now and some that are going to be turned on this fall. Distribution center for sales, we've realized that just looking at our own sort of, gaps in the province and going, okay, well, you know, a lot of these companies, ourselves included, we're buying equipment and we're buying it from, you know, either the East Coast or the West Coast or down in the States. And there's no local distributors, so we've decided to fill that gap, and we've set up a distributorship. We've got our relationships with some of the manufacturers, and so now we just buy from ourselves, and we're also able to market to some of the other ISPs in the province as well. With that same company, we've got project services, so we've been working and partnering with different entities like Hydro and Bell MTS as well, where they've contracted us to do work. We also do work with the province, and we'll be launching IT services with that as well soon. We've also launched a for-profit subsidiary that kind of mirrors our nonprofit work on the internet service delivery side. And the reason why we did that is because we're now trenching fiber into communities, and really open. It's like a whole new level of service delivery options now. So we're looking at this for-profit model where we've kind of looked at the competitive landscape. We can still be lower priced than the competitors, but now turn over and do profit sharing with the communities that we serve. And then it's up to those communities what they do with that profit. They can put it into the schools, roads, whatever they want. But that's something that we've been shifting to. The other reason why we needed that for-profit arm is because for whatever reason, banks don't look at you the same way if you're a nonprofit as if you're a for-profit. And it's a capital-intensive industry that we're in, right? We kind of needed that leverage to be able to you know, to deal with the capital reinvestments that we have. So that's sort of the lay of the land of kind of what we've been developing and the directions that we've been going. The way I'd summarize it really is that everything that we've built, it's all built around the principles of that nonprofit core. So for me, I use the words economic sovereignty. This is what I'm trying to build. And so by creating these for-profit subsidiaries, it's all designed to bring back those benefits to the community level. And when you look at our governance, it's not like all these revenue generating arms aren't beholden to mysterious shareholders out there that are driven by, you know, the almighty dollar. They are all driven by our community ownership model. So all of our owners are the tribal councils, the independent First Nations, and we also have the Northern Association of Community Councils in Manitoba. Those are our owners, and those are who, you know, ultimately call the shots on how this rolls out. So it's something that I think in the future for the way that we do technology, it's, I mean, the other word you could use for it is democratizing technology. I think personally that's kind of the future that we need to start looking at. But I'll leave it at that for now.